Welcome to the Music Career Show, telling you the stories of the world's best professional musicians.
Hello there and welcome to the Music Career Show. My name is Barry and every week I'll be speaking with incredible musicians from all over the world about how they've honed their craft and made a career out of doing what they love the most. If you're a new listener, then while you still have your device in your hand, please take a second to subscribe and tell your friends all about the Music Career Show. Hello there and welcome back to the Music Career Show. So my guest today, she says that she always knew the music was the only thing for her, which is a sentiment that I think that will resonate with most of us listening. It certainly resonates with me. She's a solo artist in every single sense of the word, and in that she writes, records, produces, mixes, and plays every single thing that you hear from her. So this is Emma Shaw, also known as MZ. Good morning, Emma.
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
It's an absolute pleasure to have you on. How are you doing? Are you well?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. As we speak right now, it's like this, but about 2 weeks to go until my album's out. So I'm quite like, things are aching from packing vinyls and stuff. And I'm quite like stressed, but I'm okay. I'm good. I'm excited.
Don't worry.
As well.
Don't worry. By the time you get your third album, you'll have some little monkey running around doing that for you. It'll be absolutely grand.
That's all the dream.
That is it. That's absolutely it. But cool. Right. So for the listener who is maybe just getting introduced to you for the first time, why don't you say hello to them and tell them who you are, what you do, and all that jazz.
So I'm MZ, as Barry said, and I'm a pop songwriter and producer. And I mean, I think you get quite a good intro anyway, but everything that I do, especially at the moment, like it might not be like this forever, but I have a real like, I definitely want to stay independent, and I have a kind of DIY like mindset, so everything that I do is, you know, comes from myself. So I do all of my own, like literally everything that you could think of. I basically don't have anyone helping me apart from like, I don't know, like members of my family, if I need a box lift or like if I need a lift and moral support and stuff like that. But yeah, the rest is all me. And if you like, I'm not good at saying, you know, if you like this artist, then you might like me, because I don't think that, I don't know. But just if you like pop music, if you like synth pop, like electronic pop, but also like some sort of like indie stuff, and you might like me. And I'm from Derby and East Midlands, and some of my work sort of references that.
So like you said, I had a very quick look through your stuff, and it's very kind of reminiscent of like sort of mid to late 80s sort of pop stuff, like not like I nearly said Nirvana, I meant Madonna. That's a totally different thing altogether. Not like Madonna and all that kind of pop stuff, but it's sort of like kind of Human League synthy stuff. It's really, really cool. Really, really cool. And I think a lot of the aesthetic, hopefully that's what you're going for, because that's what I kind of thought of. And I never thought I'd actually like that sort of stuff, but it's really, really good. It's really, really good and very, very well done. And I mean this in the nicest way possible. The fact that you are doing it all yourself, and that's what you can produce by yourself, that's phenomenal. Yeah. I totally resonate with the whole DIY thing. My business is called One Lad Music Academy, because I teach music and there's just one of me. And that came from doing, I play a one man band at my gig. So I play drums with my feet while I'm playing guitar and singing and stuff, because I eventually got fed up of relying on people that weren't reliable. And I said, fuck it, one day I'll do it myself. So that's why I sort of the same sort of ethos, I think. But yeah. So fair play to you basically. Let's go back a bit. Where did music all start for you? So like I said at the start, you always knew the music was going to be what you were doing. I'm exactly the same. I think anybody listening to this, music isn't necessarily a choice that we make. It's more of a, that's what you're meant to do. So where did music start for you?
When did it start? Probably like, I mean, it's just always been in my life. I think as well, I have two older brothers, and I was like the surprise of the family, so I was always kind of growing up. So they're a bit older than me. So I was like always growing up listening to, I suppose, like probably, I think with some of my more, because as you said, I am sort of partly influenced by some like 80s stuff and then 90s stuff as well, and like 2000s stuff.
Yeah.
But I think my kind of 90s, thing, because I was born in 1994, so I wasn't really like old enough to truly experience the 90s. But I feel like I, because my older brothers were, like a lot of their stuff was passed down to me and stuff. So I almost felt like I did, because I was always like listening to that kind of music and playing on all their like computer games and stuff. So but really, I would say like my first love was like the Spice Girls, and and I absolutely loved them. I was like obsessed. And then I would watch like Top of the Pops every week for Friday. And me and my mum would have like a disco at home. And and I would just always be watching the music channels, watching like just anything that was. I had also had a Spice Girls VHS tape, and I would like watch it over and over again. I can still remember like bits from it. And I would just, it was just always part of my life. I'd love going to HMV. We had a really good HMV in Derby that's closed now, but it has me like inside the shopping centre. But we used to go there, and I would like get like a cassette single or like a CD single. And it was always just a massive part of my life, and it always made life more, just made like, that was like the thing that was like, I don't know, like, exciting, but also my safe place, my happy place. And and then like again, like when I got older, like Britney, just sort of like this pure pop stuff. And like, I don't know how far you want me to go actually into the future, so I'll stop there.
No, that's cool, that's absolutely cool. What was the first single you bought? Can you remember the first single you bought
with my own money, or like,
yeah, with your own money? What was the very first thing you bought with your own money?
I don't remember my own money. I remember like getting one with my mum. And all those. Oh, Fever Forever, those Spice Girls. I've still got it. Yeah.
Tune. I love it. I absolutely love it. My auntie is only 4 years older than me. I was born in 92, so we're not too far apart. My auntie was only 4 years older than me, and she lived next door, and same as Spice Girls. Fucking love Spice Girls. To this day, I love the Spice Girls. One of my favorite Spice Girls quotes, one of my favorite Spice Girls things ever. This is totally off topic. But in American Pie, the reunion, which came out like nearly 10 years ago now at this stage, they were talking about Spice Girls being classic rock or something like that. And I was like, wow. Anyway, that's completely and utterly irrelevant. But there's a great version of Two Become One by a guitar player called Paul Gilbert, who was in a band called Mr. Big. So if anybody knows that, go and look it up. But
just send Spice me Girls afterwards. Class.
I will. Spice Girls, fucking class. I love it. Great stuff. So you were always just into that sort of pop stuff and all that kind of jazz. And I'm so happy that you're old enough to remember actually buying CDs and cassettes and stuff.
I think, to be fair, by the time that I did have enough money to get my own, they were probably like on the way out.
Yeah, definitely on the way out.
So, 100%. But I did get really, I tried to keep getting CD singles like until they were literally not in HMV anymore. Like I had a bit of a thing where I was like trying to get the last CD single that I could find. So I do have like some really late ones. I've got like, do you know the song Bounce by Calvin Harris and Khalees?
I probably do. In terms of modern music, I'm desperate. I'm absolutely horrendous. The last music I bought was like some Kiss vinyls from like the 80s. So But not at all. But I'm sure I recognize the song.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, it's relevant kind of what it like. It was about 2013 or something, or 2000 something like that. And I also got like a Coldplay one, I think. Yeah. And I was like, I want to get the last CD single that's in HMV. And I never saw any others in there, but they probably were like later on. But I think like people are actually starting to put them out a bit more now again, like to get in the charts, basically.
There is a bit of a resurgence, because I think there is, and in fact, our mutual friend Judy, JJ Lovegrove, she was speaking about this when I had her on, that it was to do with streaming and stuff along those lines, that there's just like, speaking of back in the 80s, you could release an album and be a millionaire, do you know what I mean? Today, you're releasing an album, good for you. Do you know what I mean? Good for you. That's great. And but you're never going to make, not with the way that the world is now, you're never going to make millions off of your album unless you are the likes of Coldplay or Kiss, maybe, that people would still go and buy the CD because they're of that generation. But our generation, I just don't see how you're ever going to make millions off an album, which is sad. And it's good to see that there is a bit of a resurgence in people actually buying physical music nowadays. It's really, really good. It's really good. Because I used to love that whole, even things like when you pull out the album sleeve and you read the lyrics, or you'd see photos of like the band and stuff like that. It's amazing. And you just don't have that with a digital stream. You just don't have it at all.
Yeah, although I would say, like, because I was really early, just by chance, I was a really early adopter of Spotify. So I've been listening to Spotify since like 2008 or something like that. So like,
oh, wow.
I was also like buying CDs at that time as well. Like, and so I'd always looked at it as like Spotify would be what I listen to most of the time. Like, let's say I was doing some admin work and I wanted to put something on, like it would be Spotify. And Spotify is where I kind of like cat a lot of my the songs that I discover, the artists that I discover. Like, it's kind of, I kind of use it as a discovery thing, but also like almost like not like a scrapbook, but almost just like a thing to remember all the music that I've discovered, because like I can't always get a CD of that. And then if I really love something and I want to collect, then I'll go out and get the physical. And I've seen it like that for a long time. And I feel like that's definitely in the past few years, I feel like people are starting to see it like that as well. And so it's like a vinyl, like for a lot of people who've ordered my vinyl, I'm sure that a lot of them probably don't even have a record player, which sounds crazy to some people. But like, I feel like some people just like it as like a piece of art or a piece of the thing that you can say you've got. Like, I have a lot of CDs and a few vinyls. I don't have that many, but I don't play them that regularly, but like I like them to be there so that occasionally I can just kind of look through them and be like, oh yeah, I've got that artist, I've got that artist. And then sometimes I will like play them in my CD player or my, like I will do it sometimes, but mainly I just kind of like them to be there to just look at every now and then.
Yeah, I totally get it. Yeah.
So, but I don't have anything against streaming, because I'd be an absolute hypocrite if I did, because I just use it all the time. So like, but I do think that obviously there's, I mean, we'll probably talk about it later, but obviously there's massive problems in terms of musician income and stuff like that. But I don't think that means that we should just ban streaming or anything. Some people do, but like, I'd say I'd be a hypocrite.
No, 100%, 100%. It's it's just, it's the way of the world nowadays. That's just how it's gone. And it was always, I done sound engineering in college, and it was always this 10, 15 years, well, 12 years ago, I would say. And it was always a thing that we were told, it's like the industry is going backwards because we all of a sudden have an MP3 file, which is a much lesser quality file, but is much smaller, and you can fit way more songs onto this little iPod. Not even an iPad or an iPhone, an iPod or an MP3 player. And it was like, But anyway, we're getting completely and utterly off topic. So you got into music because your brothers were listening to stuff, and that's great. And that's how most people get into music. I listen to all the stuff my dad listens to. So that's how we all get into music. What about playing instruments then? Do you play instruments?
Yeah, not like, I wouldn't say that I play anything amazingly well, but I kind of can get about enough to like do what I want for the song. As I did start the there's only one instrument that I had like professional like lessons for, so that was the flute, which it does make an appearance randomly in some songs and you might not like notice it. So I learned that when I was about, as I started, like I always wanted to learn the clarinet, but they always said, because you might be able to tell I'm quite small, so they always said that my fingers weren't big enough for it, and I would like they weren't big enough to like cover the holes of the clarinet, right?
Oh,
and which was just like, at the time I was like, oh, I'm so sad. And then I would like go back, I think I went back a year after, like, are they big enough now? And they're like, no, sorry. But then, to be fair, I had to go on, like, because they were really, like, this was a thing. They were really, at my primary school, they were really encouraging people to get into instruments and stuff. I don't know. Yeah. Like, I hope they still do that now. But, yeah, and they basically bought different things to have a go at and see if you would be up for learning. Yeah. And then I couldn't actually, like, blow the reed of the clarinet anyway. So maybe that was just, like, for me. Then the flute, yeah. I could actually do that, like it came more naturally. So we like rented a flute from the local music shop, Folds, it's called, in Derby. It's been there for like, I don't know, something ridiculous, like 100 years or something. And so started learning that and then kind of stopped when I was about, I don't know, 13 or something like that. And so I can play it. I never actually did any grades, but I can play it maybe to, like, I think they said I got up to like grade 5 or something like that. So it's not like amazing, but like I can pick it up and remember what the notes are. And then later on, I taught myself how to play guitar when I was about 15, but it's just something that has never come naturally to me. My like hands were built to play the guitar.
Really?
No, seriously, yeah. Because like I find every time I play it, it doesn't matter how much I practice it, I just find it like it does. It's not like I can play it and I can write songs on it, but I'm like, I'd also be like, oh, it's really like. I can't explain it. Like, it's okay. I mean, if I put like a lot of time into it and probably got like professional lessons, maybe I could play it all right. But I just don't think I was naturally going to be good at it. Then start teaching myself piano. That I'm a lot more naturally, like, that's more my forte, but I'm still working on that. Yeah. But I know that I could get fairly good at that. If I set some time aside and like properly work on it, whereas guitar, I'm like, that's a last course, but it's got enough.
I'm the total opposite. The total opposite. Guitar was always the one thing that came so naturally to me, and thanks be to God it did. But piano, it's just I don't know what it is. It's just for me in my head, it's backwards. It's backwards. So because like guitar is obviously, if you're right-handed, left hand does most of the work, and right hand does. Whereas piano is totally opposite, and I just can't. I don't know what that mental block in my head is, but I just can't get past how backwards it is to me.
Okay.
And I just can't figure out.
I think another thing with me is because I started off on the flute and learned to read music and stuff. The piano seems to like make a lot of logical sense to me.
It does.
Whereas I cannot. It doesn't matter how much I try to understand tab. I'm like, why is it like this?
This is a battle I have every single day, in that whoever decided that tablature was going to be upside down for one, I can't cope with it. I honest to God cannot cope
with it. Really? Okay. I thought that might have been something that came naturally to you.
Oh, no. To me. Yeah, to me. No problem. Oh. To 7-year-olds that are trying to figure out why the bottom line means the top string on the guitar.
Yeah, I just can't. Whereas, like, because I learned to read music at such a young age, it's like the language thing. It's like I just get it to a certain extent. Whereas that, I'm like, what? I'm not wasting my time on this.
Don't waste your time. If you can play piano, you're soaking diesel. But it doesn't seem to be holding you back anyway, because like. So if you're not overly confident, I was going to say competent, but competent is a different thing altogether. But if you're not overly confident on the likes of guitar, but you're still able to write all this music, like how do you get over that?
I just like, well, I suppose I think I can play, like I say, I can just play it enough. And I can, and so I write, you know, I know all the main chords and whatever. And I think also there's kind of like a certain amount of editing that you can do as well.
Yeah.
But also I actually play guitar live on some songs, which is, I know that's probably the most nerve-wracking part of it, but I feel like I've got a bit better through doing that. And also I have to remember, like, the audience don't, like, because they can see that I'm a more, like, a multi-instrumentist musician, they're not expecting me to like be a virtuoso on it, like, so it's not.
Yeah.
And I'm just, you know, because I write the songs around what I can do as well, then I'm only ever going to be like playing what I can do. So it's not like I'm not like taking on anything that's ridiculous.
No, I get you. Plus, punters half the time, they don't know what's good. They don't know what's good at all. In fact, half the time, they don't know what's fucking bad either. The amount of, like, and I'm not, I'm not putting anyone down, but, like, if you ever gone into a pub and it's just some owl fella singing along to Back in Track or a Drum Machine and people are going wild for it and you're like, what's wrong with you? What is actually wrong with you? So, yeah.
Well,
people
I'm
don't know what's
thing.
Good and what's bad. Do you know what I mean? No, say you're no, it's grand. It's grand. I can say that. It's my podcast. I can do what I want. But you don't have to say it. So then, like, the songwriting process, the recording process, the learning the instruments process, the everything process that goes into getting to where you are now. Are you completely self-taught in all of that?
Yeah. As I say, flute, I had some professional tuition for it. Singing, I taught myself today.
Yeah.
Later on, like, when I was in my early 20s, I was part of like a little choir thing where we did sort of, it was like a singing teacher who was doing that. So I did have like a little bit of, but by then I could already sing. So it was like, it's just like
you're
a little
right.
bit of
yeah, yeah.
progression. Then guitar, taught myself that, yeah, all the like production, everything taught myself. Yeah, songwriting taught me, like, all of the musical stuff taught myself. In terms of, like, the marketing and all of that, I did work for, like, a marketing agency for a little while.
That's handy.
So, yeah, it was, actually. So I learned quite a few things through that and also a few things about, like, graphic design as well whilst I was there. That wasn't my job while I was there, but I sort of sat with some of the designers and did learn a few things.
Good
so
stuff.
That kind of helps me on that level. You know, things like writing a press release or something, which some people wouldn't even know where to start. And I'm really glad that, like, I'm really glad that I got that training, if you like.
I love it. On that point then, so... Yeah, you had a bit of help or a little bit of experience in the market and designing and all that, the kind of the non-musical parts of being an independent musician. For the actual musical parts, you taught yourself all these instruments, you taught yourself the production, you taught yourself how to record, you taught yourself all of these things. Now, you and I both know, I'm self-taught in all everything that I don't do as well, apart from I done sound engineering in college, but for the most part, I'm self-taught. Now, the thing that people always... that I see, because I teach music, the thing I see is that people have an opinion that, oh, I can teach myself, but I don't know where to start. Or I get an awful lot of adults coming, oh yeah, well, I tried an app, I tried YouTube, I tried this and that and the other, and I'm not getting very far. And what I'm going to ask you is that you're probably going to be in the same boat as many of the adults that I teach and have taught, but you seem to have come out the other side. So, like, how did you get over the kind of the hurdles of, number one, knowing what it is that you need to learn? Because if you need to learn how to gain in a microphone, but you don't know that that's what you're wanting to learn, you're searching how to make microphone work in computer. Do you know what I mean? Like, how do you get over that? How do you figure out what it is that you're trying to learn?
That's a really good point, because this is like my pet peeve of the moment, is that it's actually a lot harder at the minute to actually find what resource you need as well, because like Google and YouTube have changed a lot since I was needing to find out stuff in the beginning, and they're very like algorithm AI kind of based, and they just throw up things that just aren't relevant, and it's really infuriating. So my heart goes out anyone who's in that position right now, but do you want me to share like the exact resources that I sort of learned guitar and piano with, or like if that would help anybody?
Yeah, by all means do.
So guitar, I'm sure you've heard of this, but I learned with like Justin Guitar. Mm-hmm. Have you heard of him? Yeah.
I have messaged him to come on the podcast.
Hi.
I know exactly who he is.
Yeah. And so he, that was like perfect for me because like I had a guitar when I was like, as I was saying, oh no, I might have been 17 actually when I got a guitar, and it came with like a CD and stuff, but like I just couldn't get on with it. I couldn't, like, loads of people, like you said, the people that you talk to are like that. Like, if it's not the right way for you, I think you have to discover your way of learning as well. So, like, just in guitar, the thing that was really useful for me is that he had, like, different exercises that you could do to practice what you'd learned so that it really, like, stuck in there. And he had the things like the doing like chord changes and seeing how many you could do in a minute and stuff like that. And that was that really made a difference. That was really instrumental in me actually continuing on with the instrument. So I had some of his books as well. And then piano. Yeah. And then piano, there's a really good series of books called Adult Piano Adventures. And they're really good because they like walk you through. You're kind of gradually learning new techniques and then you're using them on like the next page. So it's not like you're just trying to memorize them and then you just like forget the one that you memorized last and then you're onto a new thing. But then I'm also like supplementing that with sort of like official grade books and stuff. Because then you can like see what you've learned in the pedal piano adventures and you can kind of like, you know, use it in the actual stuff. And then with I think I was spending the like years of my life trying to find pieces of software that I could make music on, because I feel like I kind of naturally knew that you needed to like layer stuff up and like I don't know, I was always trying to make it happen in my own way. So, but I think my breakthrough came when I got an iPad when I was about 18 and GarageBand. That was like, that was the first piece of software that actually made sense to me. And I'm a learner. YouTube videos and stuff are going to be so useful if it's something that I know that I need to like specifically look into. But for me, the best way of me learning is going to be just me trial and error, like on the software, just doing it, like just trying to make a song. And like, this is what I'd probably recommend to people who are like me, would be just like, you've got something in your head. So just like try and make it. And then every barrier that you come up against, that's when you go and like Google. So you know what I mean? Like you're like, oh, this is like, I don't know, I want this synth to sound this way. So then you would go and look up like tutorials on creating like synth sounds or whatever, and then or you'd be like, I want the vocal to sound this way, I want to use a compressor but I don't know what it is. So then you'd be like, I'll go and look at a compressor tutorial, and then gradually over time you kind of remember some of the stuff, and then but I'm not like it's like I'm probably the way I do things, other people be like, okay, like it's, but it works for me, and it's just like I wouldn't always necessarily be able to explain it to a class of people or something, but it's just various things that you just pick up along the way, and you kind of, and I think that the best thing about mixing and producing is that as much as people say that there are a lot of like rigid rules and stuff and like really, like a lot of it is stylistic choice, so you can kind of, and I think people should be more free in that as well, because some people say like to me about some of my music, they might say like, it sounds too like the 2000s or like 280s or whatever, it doesn't sound like, I don't know, who would I choose, like Joel Corey or like David Guetta or somebody like that. You absolutely has their place, but that's not what I'm like trying to achieve. Like I'm not, and sometimes I feel like that there's a lot of rigidity and there's a lot of like, it must sound exactly like the modern standard. And like, I don't know, I feel like there is a lot of more room than we think for like personal choices and just like experimented and bending some of the rules and stuff, which I think is cool to do.
I totally get you. And I think that's where the industry is going. Like I said, when I studied sound, well, I studied sound engineering in 2010, right? Yeah. This is just an overview to a greater point, or I'm getting to a point. But so when I studied sound engineering in 2010, like you say, there was rules. Do this way. This has to be done this way. And I always remember thinking, like, setting up like a session in like Pro Tools. So Pro Tools, for anyone who doesn't know, is basically a more professional version of GarageBand or Cubase or any of them that you get. Recording software. And in order to do what I deemed to be a really simple thing, you had to jump through all these hoops. Now, as trained as a sound engineer, you get taught why you have to jump through these hoops and you get taught the logic of it and all this kind of crack. And that's great. But nowadays, you've got the likes of GarageBand. You've got the likes of literally anything, CapCut or any of those like kind of, we'll call them social media editing software apps that are literally 17-year-old me back in 2010 thinking, why the fuck is it not just do that? And now all of a sudden there is a just do that button instead of having to jump through all these hoops. And it does just go to show you that there is, the industry, I think, is moving in a way that makes it more accessible for the likes of you or for the likes of anybody else listening that's trying to do this by themselves, to actually, the barriers to entry are so much less. That's terrible grammar. My English teacher in school would be absolutely furious with me. But anyway, there are far, far fewer barriers to entry in terms of all that sort of stuff nowadays. And you made another great point there about how, on the total flip side, how when we were learning back in the day on YouTube, the market wasn't as flooded with so much stuff. And nowadays, like, I've had so many YouTubers on that like teach and stuff like that, and their way of teaching is fantastic, or someone else's way of teaching mightn't be as good, or it might be better, or whatever. But like you say, it's like trial and error, because if you go and look for something, you're going to get a million videos that are sort of maybe touching on that, but not really what you're looking at. Whereas when we were learning, it was, there just wasn't as much of it. So we could just go and find the likes of Justin Guitar or Marty Schwartz or any of those lads that were teaching back then, and they were just doing concise lessons that you could literally search for.
Don't know that one.
Sorry, my Alexa there. Just like, but yeah. So the long and the short of that is basically, for anyone that's wanting to learn it, start trial and error by yourself until you can't.
Yeah, I would say so, yeah. And just don't be afraid to do things your way, you know, because it's like one of the things, like, I feel like, I don't know. So, for example, I don't know. Sorry, I don't know where I'm going with this one. I would say...
That's my life, don't worry.
Yeah, you know, like, a lot of the songs that you hear on, like, commercial radio and stuff, like, the voice is, like, so, like, up front, like so compressed, like really sharp, and that's the style. But like, I didn't want the songs on my album, all of them, to sound like that. And I think there's certain aspects of like the online community who are very rigid in their, like, everything should sound like that because the things on commercial radio sound like that. Whereas I think definitely more people should be like, no, I want like my vocals to be a bit softer. I want them to be like further back in the mix. I don't want like, I just want it to sound like I want it to sound, rather than following these rules. So I think I would like more acceptance that there are stylistic choices that you make, and it doesn't necessarily mean that you're crap.
No, 100%.
That's sometimes what some people will probably think. And also more willingness of everybody to just like experiment a bit more. And like, I'm always like a fan of people's production where I'm like, oh, they're doing it. That's a bit of a ballsy move. Or like, I don't know, just stuff that sounds a bit different. And I don't sort of judge things on like, you didn't like cue that kick drum correctly. Like, you can do it how you want, basically. Like, that's what I want more of. Like, just, you know, yeah.
There's too much of a platform nowadays for people with opinions to have a notion what they're talking about. Far too much of it.
I was going to say, and the worst thing is that like they've got loads of people who agree with them, and it makes it seem like that's the opinion and you're like, oh, it's hard to go against the grain and like, yeah. But
fuck the grain. Fuck the grain. You'd be grand. Do you know what I mean? Do what makes you happy. You'd be grand. What about BBC introducing them? We spoke about where we mentioned JJ there earlier on. She was also involved with BBC introducing. How did you get involved with it?
Just literally like most people do, like just uploaded a really early demo when I was about 20. I think the first one didn't get on it, something. Second one, I think I was, because I've always been the type of person who's like, nah, I'm going to chase people up by email. Like, I'm just going to see, you know, because a lot of things get lost. A lot of times, yeah, it's worth just advocating for yourself if you like. And I don't know, I think I emailed and said just like, what is, just so that I know, like, what is the process, like, after you've uploaded it, how long is it until you know that it's not going to be aired? And not long after that, it did get aired, which, looking back, is actually quite surprising because it was very rough around the edges. But I'll always be grateful to Dean Jackson, who's from BBC Introducing in the East Midlands, for seeing something in my work. And after that, pretty much, maybe there was a couple that didn't get, like, aired, but everything after that was aired. And after a while, I just started to, I think it really changed my career, because before then I was very like just putting things on SoundCloud and like collaborating with anybody that I could, and just I was very like internet based. And then being involved in BBC Introducing actually encouraged me to like get involved with the local scene and get out and like participate. And so eventually like met a lot of people through that and other artists, and just got involved with things. And it met so many like friends through it, had a lot of opportunities for like airplane gigs and festivals through it, which has been amazing. Recorded the live session that's coming out soon as well. That was a really cool experience. It was for BBC, but it wasn't like, it's not like made avail or anything like that. So don't worry. Right. No, it was at a place in Nottingham called Metronome, but it was like it was a wild day because there were like 5 cameras or something. So it was like a proper like setup, and I had to do a lot of takes. I feel like the take that was the one, I was actually really tired by the end of that. And I was like, I swear that I got like a chord wrong. But apparently you couldn't. Yeah. And I know that I'm going to be like watching that and be like, that's the place that it happened. But I know that other people like won't be. But yeah, no, that was a lot of fun. But it was like a wild day. And yeah, it's just really been massive for me. And I think another thing that it gives you is it gives you something to put in your press materials. And like when you're approaching gigs, any kind of opportunity, you could be like, I've got the backing of BBC Introducing, and it really helps. So I think we're so lucky in the UK that we've got that. Like that is, it should be like the envy of like the music industry around the world. I think it's really cool.
I totally agree with you. I spoke with JJ about it at length, and I think it's one thing to upload your music online, and like it's one thing to upload it to SoundCloud and have it out there and have people be able to listen to it, or even upload it to Spotify, or even upload your videos to YouTube and all that kind of crack, and that's great. But to have the backing of something an organization as big as the BBC, it does make a huge difference. And you're right, it is something that in this part of the world we're very fortunate to have. You did mention there towards the end of that day that you were recording your session that you were absolutely knackered. I know that you do have your own physical and health challenges. How does that affect you, and what is it?
So I've got ME, and I've also got a mental illness called OCD, and together they're not great. They kind of interact in not nice ways at times. It does affect me every day, right? Well, because I'm quite lucky in the fact that I got diagnosed when I was quite young, so like all my adult life it's what I've known, so it's easier in that way than like knowing what it's like to be healthy and then like suddenly getting hit with it. That would be a lot harder. So like I can't even remember what it's like to feel like healthy, so I just get like I'm at the stage now where I'm less like focusing on, I think there's a point that I reached where I was less focusing on trying to fight it and trying to get, like, cure myself, if you like.
Yeah.
Because obviously it wasn't working. So, and then I just started, like, accepting it in a way, but, like, trying to just find ways to just do all the things I wanted to anyway and, like, work around it. That's where I'm at a minute until, like, scientists come up with something. So, yeah, it does affect me every day. Like, for example, like, I was, so for a gig that I'm doing for the launch of my album, I was, like, ironing rhinestones onto merch that I'm going to sell at the gig. And I basically was, like, aching for days after. I could only do, like, four at a time because it was, like, really, I just find stuff, and some stuff I just find really physically grueling. And it's the same with, like, guitar, as I was on about earlier. One of the reasons for it that I don't get on with it is because I find it really physically taxing. And also, when I'm, like, standing up playing it, I get a lot of, like, non-muscular skeletal system is absolutely, like, not the envy of the world. So, it's all connected. So, like, I have, like, various pains all over the place. And it'll all end up like that it's originated from my jaw or something, or, like, my neck. I'm not great on, like, the left-hand side of the body. And I think it's because of, like, the way that I sit sometimes. Anyway, so that where the guitar goes, like, on the shoulder, I'm like, oh, I can only do, like, one or two songs with it. So, like, it kind of, it affects definitely how often that I perform, I'm always kind of having to think about my schedule and how long, like, basically it's just like a thing that you get used to where I know that after I've spoken to you for an hour, I'm going to be quite tired after that. So I'll have to go and not be doing anything that's high impact for a while.
Yeah.
And then, like, wouldn't necessarily be so high impact for me would be like going and rehearsing for my gig, because it's a lot of standing up. I'm not great at standing up in one place. But weirdly, when I'm, like, moving, because I can do, like, exercise and stuff, that's something that I started during lockdown. So I can, like, do a little bit of a run sometimes, actually. But it has to be, like, the right condition. So it has to be, like, when I've got nothing else on, I'm not stressed, I'm not, like, in pain. So it's just a balancing act of, like, just making sure that you're not overdoing it, which also would impact my mental health, because that gets triggered a lot by stress and tiredness. So it's, like, great. But like I was packaging a load of final orders yesterday, and I was kind of like, I want to do them all in the day because I want to get that fatigue out of the way, because I need to rehearse as soon as I can. So it's always those kind of calculations that are coming that are happening in your head, and they just become like autopilot. So you don't always notice it, but it just means that, like, you have to have a bit of a different way of working. And I have to think a lot about, if I'm going out for a gig, when am I gonna, like, what time am I going out for the gig? How am I traveling there? Is that gonna tire me out? When I get there, have I got anywhere I can rest? When am I eating? That's an important thing to keep my energy up. Then, like, at the venue, is there anywhere to sit down? Is there anywhere that I can be a bit quiet? How many people am I going to have to talk to? Because that's another thing, like, that tires out my voice a lot. And then, obviously, I need that voice to sing. So I'm like, how am I going to avoid talking to people and feel the gig? And how am I going to explain that? Have I got my vocal lozenges? Like, all this kind of thing. But it just, you know, I know maybe like two or three other musicians who have ME as well. And that's really cool. Like, that I've been involved with a charity called Attitude Is Everything, who basically advocate for, like, disabled and chronically ill musicians. And there's a lot of people doing really cool things. But I do think as well, there needs to be a lot of improvement in accessibility. And also, like, in general, I'm quite passionate about sort of trying to change the perception that music is this like thing that you have to exhaust yourself and like work till burnout and like live a wild, fast life and like become and like, you know, tour so much that you have to go on like a drip or something and like all of that. I would love to see a future where, and I think a lot of the problems are caused by the fact that like financial problems and stuff and the lack of income for musicians and all the ways that we're ripped off.
Yep.
But, you know, so I'm hoping that there can be changes and also in like funding opportunities. I mean, I could go into it all day, but, you know, all those kind of changes would make life better for a lot of disabled and chronically ill musicians so that we can like work in our own way and on our own schedule and not have to like gig every single day, but still like, you know, so I'm on my journey of like trying to find a way to make that sustainable, you know, long term.
But I do wish you the best of luck because I know how hard it is as a thankfully well and healthy musician to make a good go of it. And when people, I really wish you the best of luck and I hope you get there quicker than I think you're going to get there, because when people, that sounds very negative, but you know what I mean? When you go and people are like, if they try and book you for a private event and you're like, oh, it's this much. I'm like, oh, well, I was only hoping to spend about 10% of that. And you're kind of like, no. And they're like, they don't understand why it's so expensive. And it's because, as you say, number one, you're knackered, right? You're absolutely you're knackered. Like if I had to go and do a 3-hour gig, I'm knackered. If you're doing it right, you're knackered. Regardless, healthy or otherwise, you're absolutely knackered. Do you know what I mean? There's only so much your voice can take. But there's also that thing of like, we've put years and years and years of our lives into working so hard for something to then be told that it's only worth next to nothing. Do you know what I mean? Like most musicians, if they start learning at the age of 10 and they don't get their first proper paying gig until they're 25, that's 15 years worth of work and learning and training to then get anything back from it. Doctors only have to do 7. Do you know what I mean? And they get paid an absolute fortune.
It's a massive sacrifice. Yeah.
A huge sacrifice. A huge, huge, huge sacrifice. And I think with people like yourself, you will change the perception of it. I think nowadays it's I think since the pandemic, to be fair, music and entertainment and creativity in general is held in higher regard, thanks be to God, because so many people were, for lack of a better term, forced into it. Like I always said, this podcast wouldn't have happened only for the pandemic. Do you know what I mean? Just wouldn't have. And podcasting is now a genuine job. And I think the pandemic had an awful lot to do with boosting that, because so many people went into it, and so many more people that wouldn't have normally been exposed to the likes of podcasts and the likes of any other creative arts now see the value in it. Once they didn't have it readily available, they're now like, oh, Christ. The amount of dodgy backyard parties that myself and my bandmate got booked for over lockdown, probably shouldn't be saying that, but we got booked for them all the same because it was, do you know what I mean, was unbelievable. So that was what kept us going. Do you know what I mean? Was people just deliberately going, well, no, that wasn't true. But you know what, fuck it, it was. We turned down a lot of them. But that's sort of where I was going. The point I'm trying to get to is, remember I told you before we started recording that 99% of my editing was me cutting out my own shy talk? The kind of where I'm trying to go with is that when the pandemic kind of took all those things away, an awful lot more value was put on it because people realized that they didn't have it. So I think we are kind of closer than we've ever been to being sort of recognized for the value that we give society and the community and the world in general. But I do still think that we are a long way off. But I hope I'm wrong. I really, really, really hope I'm wrong. And the more people that advocate for it, the better. Speaking of which, in a sort of way, you've started your own label. Is that right? Your own record label.
Yes, but it at the minute, it's just like for me to release my music on. So like, it may become something else in the future, but I have to like go with what I can manage because I have a tendency to want to, the OCD part of me wants to like run before I can walk and like go for loads of things. But yeah, I'm at the minute I'm just gonna see what I learn from releasing my own stuff, and I thought it was just nice to have a bit of a brand like behind that and just give it a bit of legitimacy and something for me to be proud of. And yeah, so that's where I'm at with that at the minute.
Very good. And like, is there anything, like, if anybody is out there, oh, by the way, I never actually said, thanks very much for sharing that about how you struggled with ME and OCD. And oh, I'm no sure, I hope other people out there that are, if anyone's out there listening and hearing that there is someone else like them out there and thriving despite it, fantastic. Back to what I was saying was about Zirconia Records. So if anybody is out there wanting to maybe do exactly what you're doing, so instead of being self-released, you're releasing it under Zirconia Records. Two sides of the same coin, but I do get where you're coming from. It's that it's you're wanting to release it under your own label. That's amazing and fantastic. How does someone go about setting up their own label?
Literally just come up with a name, do what you're doing anyway, and call it.
Do what you're doing anyway.
Yeah, although there's a lot of, like, releasing music physically for the first time this year, there's been a massive learning curve with that. Things that I didn't even know about, a lot to do with, like, so for example, I had to apply for an AP2 license to be able to print my own vinyl. That was a learning curve and a lot more expensive than I imagined. I think I think it's a good idea to do your own label if you're thinking, like, I want to be releasing stuff long term. I might want to, there's potential scope to do something creative with it in the future. For example, like, you might want to sign somebody else, or you might want to put on gigs or something, or like just make it into something else. Then it's a good idea to come up just with a name for it. And I think a lot more artists than you think also have their own, like, vanity labels and stuff. And also it gives you something nice to put on the physical product that gives it more, like, legitimacy, I suppose. But it's not for everyone. But I think it just gives you a bit of flexibility. It's like kind of future-proofing it. It's like giving you something that in the future, if you decided to do X, Y, and Z, you could do it under this brand name. So, I don't know where it's going as of now. At the minute, it's just like my little world for releasing my albums with, but who knows.
Well, again, I wish you all the best of luck with it. It's a great thing, and if ever you do sign people, let me know. I'd love to have you back on to chat about what the process was and stuff like that.
I'm sure that'd be a whole other learning curve.
I'm sure it will. But you look, it no better woman to do it, huh? Before we head into a quick fire round, Emma, and start finishing up, is there anything that you're working on now? You've got your debut album coming out. Talk to us about that.
Yes, so my debut album is called All Those Things I Thought I Knew, and it's out on September 1st on vinyl and digital. Couldn't afford CDs, but maybe one day. And it's basically a culmination of, like, 6 years of work of just trying to learn all the production techniques and, like, trying to find my own musical voice and took 6 years as well because of, like, the pandemic and everything like that. I took 3 years out of it. But I'm now, like, in a position where I've done it, I'm ready to release it, and I'm hoping that it's, like, the start of a new sort of journey. Hopefully, I'm really, at the minute, I'm not in a space where I'm actively working on new music. I do come up with ideas a lot and, like, record them like just on my phone, but that's kind of in preparation for, like, the next album, which I'm really, really looking forward to working on, because that's what I love the most. That's what I enjoy the most, just working on my music. I'm hoping that with the profits from this album I can get a new computer, because this one that I'm talking on right now is basically, like, it's served me well, don't get me wrong, but it's been repaired quite a few times. I'm really hoping to get, like, a laptop so that I can go be a bit more mobile and just do music elsewhere than this room. Yeah, so that's, like, my aim, and I've got loads of ideas for new music. That's just, as I say, that's what I love to do. I just want to, like, make new sounds, experiment, maybe work with other people a little bit more in terms of, like, collaborations, and just get better at what I do. But at the minute, just focusing on trying to make this album a thing. I've got a launch gig that I'm doing, headline gig in Nottingham, Rough Trade. It's one of my favourite venues, and I'm going to be performing the album in full. Trying to rehearse for that at the minute. It's hard to fit it in, but I'm going to try. Yeah. And then I would really love to go on like a tour like next year, but a tour in a way that would be healthy for me, like not a tour in terms of like every day. But yeah, so I'm hoping that I can sort of focus a bit more on trying to book that as well, like later in the year. And so next year, hopefully we'll be like touring and making. But yeah, I'm really proud of the album and I'm really excited to share it with people. And it's when I was packing some of the vinyls yesterday, it was really hitting home, like how many people had ordered it and how amazing that actually was. Like, and how amazing it is that even someone will buy one ticket for a show that you're doing. Like, that's just astonishing, really. And I'm really proud of it. And I'm trying to take a few more moments. I feel like in the pandemic, I was so used to like waiting, like wishing on another year or another day. You know what I mean? So that you can like get out of that time. And I feel like at the moment, I'm trying to adjust mentally to more living in the moment again and like enjoying things, but I'm not there yet. But I'd like to kind of just enjoy this album rollout when I've done all the preparations for it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm looking forward to it, and I'm, as I said before, like 5,000 times, I'm really proud of it. So
that's fair. That's amazing. Well, fair play to you. Congratulations. It is. It's.
Thank you.
I've listened to some of the track, I've listened to some of the stuff, and it is. It's excellent. You should be really proud. If you're listening to this on the day that it comes out, I just had a quick check today. If you're listening on it if you're listening to this podcast today, the day that it comes out, today is the 1st September, which is the same day as All Those Things I Thought I Knew comes out. So if people are looking for it, Emma, where can they find it?
So they can find it on all of the usual streaming platforms, Spotify, mm-hmm. Apple Music, Tidal, Deezer, Amazon Music, whatever else there is, YouTube Music. And then if you'd like to download it, a few places you can do it: iTunes Classic, Bandcamp, mz.bandcamp.com. That would be a great place to go. My official website, mzmusic.com. If you want to get the vinyl, best place probably Bandcamp or my official website. And yeah, I think that's everything covered. Just listen to it in some format. Enjoy.
There you go. That's the best pitch I've ever heard. Just listen to it, for fuck's sake, will you? But no, I wish you absolutely all the best with that. And I'm going to listen to it myself. I'm looking forward to when it comes out. Before we finish up though, Emma, we're going to jump into a quick fire round of silly questions just for the pure crack. And we're going to leave it there. Right. So question number one, and this was one I asked last week and I thought was really good. If your life was a musical, what would be the title of the musical?
Oh, that's such a hard question.
I know, it really got the other person, the last person I asked this, it really got her like thinking. In fact, her name was Emma as well. Really got her thinking about it.
What about, it's probably going to be a terrible title.
The worse the better.
Twists and Turns and a Sprinkle of Weirdness.
Oh, well, I know what the name of the podcast is today. Twists and Turns and a Sprinkle of Weirdness.
I mean, it hasn't been that twisty and turny, but you know, just like everyone's is a twist and turn, isn't it?
I love that. That's so like, I don't know, wordy and like kind of, I don't know, it's like Stephen Fry-ish is what it is. I love that. Brilliant. If your musical journey had a mascot, what would it be?
Some sort of bird, because I love birds. So we'll just say a puffin.
A puffin?
Yeah.
They're class. I went to the Isle of Skye 2 years ago and we saw all the puffins like floating around the place. They're class. Cool. Okay, I love it.
I was just gonna go off on a tangent to say I also went to a place called Puffin Island in Wales this year. So that was why I was,
Puffins. Class. Love it. Right. If you were to fight any celebrity, who would you like to fight?
I don't think I would fight anybody.
Come on, you have to fight someone.
I don't want to fight anyone.
Okay. Who would you have a heated argument with?
There's plenty, but I don't want to say.
Okay. Who would... Okay, let's just go back.
I know.
Yeah?
Yes, I don't know if it's a celebrity. I would go... This is so niche.
Okay, go for it. I love niche.
Do you play any games or anything like video games or like...
Zelda.
Okay, well, it's nothing to do with that, but I'd go... round to the headquarters of EA Sports, right?
Right.
And
I'm following you.
I'll be like, what happened? What happened after you had the world at your feet?
Yeah.
You were producing these amazing games.
Yeah.
Like in all the way up to like the mid-2000s, maybe late-2000s. What happened and why?
Okay.
Can you just like find it in your heart to just go back to some of that ethos that used to, you know, guide you when you were creating those amazing games? Just have a look inside yourself. That's what I would say.
Because they had like the Harry Potter Quidditch game, didn't they?
Never played on that.
Oh.
Sorry. My, like, if anyone, this is going really niche, but like my favorite, like the games, you might be able to see some of them in the background, sort of around this area, but you can't really see the titles. But yeah, I still like have a PS2 that I play on quite a lot.
Yes.
And my, basically my favorite titles from it were made by like a subset of like EA that was called EA Sports Big. And it made like, have you ever played on SSX?
Oh, that's the snowboarding one.
Yeah. That's
I've
like
never played
it. You've got to play it, Barish. You've
okay.
got to go away and play it. I'm always like, yeah, I'm trying to like, as I've got into adulthood, because all the PS2 games I wanted when I was a kid, like are now like a quid. I'm just like properly getting into them.
And
I'm getting all the ones that, yeah, I can like play all the ones that I was desperate to play now. And it's like the best thing. It's like, it gives me a lot more joy than like modern gaming. And
yep.
Yeah, I love all of those games that they kind of put out in that time. And a lot of the, again, because I grew up playing a lot of my brother's games and we had a lot of EA Sports stuff. But it was like in the golden era of EA Sports, when they had like really detailed career modes and everything like that. Sorry, I'm going off on such a tangent. I've got to probably wrap it up. But, you know, I used to, there's a lot that I still play. And yeah, and I just, yeah. And then it kind of just seemed to get really soulless.
Oh.
And like all about microtransactions and like loot boxes and all of that. And I'm like, I could not care less. I just want to have my own little world. So yeah, sorry.
Do you know what annoys me about modern gaming is that I can't just go to the shop or Amazon. I won't even go to the shop. I just get it on Amazon or eBay or something. I can't just get the game, plug it in and play it. I have to
wait for
the whole fucking thing to download. Stop it.
I know. And like in our house, we have terrible Wi-Fi. We don't have, like it's going to take like 3 days to download that. And by that time, I'm like out of the mood. I'm not in the mood anymore. Whereas, you know, that classic, that PS2, I feel like was like the peak of gaming where you just like slap the disc in and they put so much care and effort. They weren't like, oh, well, we can put like an expansion pack a year down the line or we can put a patch on it. Like,
No.
A few weeks,
it was perfect when you got it. That was it.
Yeah.
I'll never forget the transition over from PlayStation 1 to PlayStation 2 when you had to use joysticks to move around the place.
Yeah.
You couldn't use the arrow buttons. The arrow buttons were for like selecting your weapon or something. I was like, oh. Yeah, there you go. That was a lovely little tangent to finish off on. Emma, really quick before we finish up then, you mentioned your website, you mentioned all your socials and all of it, or you mentioned where to get your music and stuff. But if anybody wants to, I don't know, get in touch for if they want to be signed to Zirconia Records.
I'm not looking for submissions yet, Barry. We're not at that point.
But if anybody is looking for you, if they want to follow you on online or anything along those lines, where can they find you?
So I'm just, it's quite simple. I'm at MZA Music, EMZAE Music on everything that you can think of. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, unfortunately. Threads.
You're the first one to say Threads. I love it.
I've got a newsletter as well. On Substack, mz.substack.com, mzmusic.com, and just search MZ in your favorite place.
MZ, you're an absolute legend. Thanks so much for coming on today.
Oh, thank you, Barry.
That was the Music Career Show. Thank you for listening. Don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and tell your friends about the Music Career Show.